Good morning. This is the Wednesday Morning Zine on KSJD. I'm Tom Yoder. More than ever, people consider the various direct and indirect benefits of wilderness to be an important part of their life experience. Access to natural areas where we can feel a sense of isolation, adventure, or communion with friends and family are considered essential to our well-being. But the way we balance access to the tangible and intangible resources found on our public lands where most wilderness is found can be tricky and lead to difficult political and social debate. My guest this morning is Andrew Gulliford. He's a professor of history and environmental studies at Fort Lewis College and author of several books and articles examining the role of wilderness in society. He recently edited the book Outdoors in the Southwest, an adventure anthology, a collection of writings from Terry Tempest Williams, Edward Abbey, Craig Childs, and others. Good morning, Mr. Gulliford.
Good morning.
Let's just start off. Can you talk a little bit about your personal relationship to wilderness, maybe a story that sort of exemplifies what wilderness means to you personally?
Personal story, I guess, would be 25 years ago, I was directing a university museum in Silver City, New Mexico. And the Wilderness Society came to me and said they wanted a big party in the Gila Wilderness for the 25th anniversary, and would I help direct events on campus? And I said, well, that sounds like a lot of work. Let me think about it. And then I said, you know, there's two phone numbers I'd like from board members at the Wilderness Society. I'd like the phone number for Edward Abbey and Wallace Stegner. And the Wilderness Society's staff member from Santa Fe said, well, I can't give you those. Those are unlisted numbers. And I said, well, I don't really have time to work on your party. And I hung up. And 2 weeks later, he called back with the phone numbers. And we did have a great celebration for Wilderness in Silver City. But I got to actually call Edward Abbey and Wallace Stegner. And so those were great wilderness connections. And, wow. And it was fun to talk to those famous authors.
Yeah, definitely pillars in the outdoor wilderness. This is certainly the writers that are out there. What do you see right now as being some of the biggest challenges in this debate over wilderness and access to wilderness?
Well, the Wilderness Act was passed 50 years ago, and there was much environmental legislation in the 1960s. I teach classes at Fort Lewis College on national parks. I have a separate class on wilderness. I teach environmental history. And so much of our legislation comes out of the 1960s. Well, it's 50 years later. Now we have a new generation. And quite frankly, those folks who are green are graying. You know, they're an older group. And mountain bikes are not allowed in wilderness. And so we really need to reach out to younger people so that they understand the values that produced federal wilderness legislation those decades ago. So one of the challenges is to get new individuals in the West and in the Southwest to understand what was meant 50 years ago in terms of setting aside land that would be untrammeled and land where, quote, man is a visitor who does not remain, and to really set aside these vignettes of a pioneer America.
You know, you mentioned the younger generation that's coming into the environmental movement, coming into this idea of wilderness. What kind of values are they bringing to the table now that you see as being difficult? You know, we've got kids involved in like extreme sports. You mentioned mountain biking, those kinds of things. How is that changing the debate around wilderness?
Well, public land visitation for long backpacks is shrinking. So people do more things in what is called the front country. So they can spend time outdoors, but then, you know, they want to hit the brew pub at night. And so the long 30-day outward bound experiences are happening less and less. So part of it is how we use the landscape and trying to get folks to disconnect, put down their cell phones and so forth, and spend time outdoors is a challenge. Mm-hmm. We're a very different society now than we were when the Wilderness Act was passed, and yet those values are the same. And I have students deeply committed to wilderness in classes at Fort Lewis College. It's just they need to be taught why this is important, and then they see it.
Do you feel like more portions of wilderness will have to be set aside for those, what you call kind of front area activities, where people can get into wilderness and get out quick, as opposed to making those deeper forays into deeper areas?
I think wilderness lands need to be set aside for a variety of reasons. We have an enormous amount in Utah, for instance, of wilderness study areas. We also have them here in southwest Colorado that have been put in a sort of holding pattern. The federal agencies and volunteer groups have said these are important lands. They should be set aside as wilderness. But if only God can make a tree, only Congress can make a wilderness. It takes an act of Congress. And so we're hoping for some new wilderness. Representative Scott Tipton is supporting a Hermosa Creek area. But there's many more lands that should be set aside and could be set aside. But we also need to get more people interested in the concept of wilderness. It's not just about land. It's about getting folks outdoors.
If you're just tuning in, this is the Wednesday Morning Zine on KSJD. I'm Tom Yoder. My guest this morning is Andrew Guilford. He's a professor of history and environmental studies at Fort Lewis College, and he's written several books and articles looking at wilderness in society and its importance to all of us. I think one interesting example of what's going on right now in the wilderness debate is the situation over in Recapture Canyon that you've written about in a few different newspapers, where the county commissioners, or at least Phil Lyman, one of the county commissioners in San Juan County, Utah, is saying, hey, you know what, we're gonna ride our ATVs through Recapture Canyon, which is a protected area, to really show that we can have access to these lands. And just summarize a little bit about what you've written about and some of your feelings about that situation.
Recapture Canyon is a beautiful little canyon just east of Blanding. It is not designated wilderness, but when you add really rare archaeological sites, things get complicated. So it's wild land, no question about it. It's some of the wildest canyon country I think anybody could encounter. It does not have a federal wilderness designation. It could. The real issue there is archaeology. So the canyon, an illegal ATV trail was built. Two area men have been convicted of that under a misdemeanor. There was a $35,000 fine. And now there's this tug of war between ATV riders and the BLM and other folks very interested in this canyon over what's going to happen. And the issue is, do you allow ATV access on a road that was illegally built? So that's one question. A second, and I think even more important question, is what about damage to the archaeology? So that damage has been estimated at $309,539.75.
Wow.
Well, who's going to pay for that? Repair costs may be as high as $90,000. That's not in San Juan County, Utah's budget. It's not in the BLM's budget.
And these damages came from the trail that was put in through Recapture Canyon?
Correct. Okay. The folks who built the trail just ran through a couple of major archaeological sites. Hmm. Tribal peoples are justifiably outraged. And that needs to be part of this discussion, not just who's going to access the canyon and how, but who is going to deal with this damage. And I'm afraid that part of the question hasn't come up, and it should, because those are real public resources, cultural resources that have been damaged, and that damage needs to be fixed.
Yeah, I mean, besides this idea of accountability, or this issue of accountability on these kinds of things, I think the other big question that this brings up is, we talk about public lands and we talk about the public as if it were this single-minded entity, but it's really not. You've really got different public out there. You've got Native American groups, you've got people who want this sort of quiet recreation, you've got people who want to use motorized recreation. How do we reconcile all of that?
Well, and wilderness is a good lens to look at that. So just here's an important statistic. 4%, only 4% of America is federally designated wilderness. 4% of America is paved. So, you know, there's enough Walmart parking lots out there in terms of acreage to almost equal wilderness. So do we need more wilderness? Yes. Do we have plenty of roads out there for people who want to drive whatever it is they want to drive? I think so. I think we have miles and miles of roads. The question is now, this tug of war about access And I think we need both. And most of the management plans address that. So all public lands now have to have travel management plans. San Juan County, Utah has them here, Montezuma County, Dolores County. They're contentious, but there are miles of roads.
If you're just tuning in, you are listening to KSJD, and this is the Wednesday Morning Zine. I'm Tom Yoder. This morning we're talking about wilderness and some of the issues around access to wilderness. I'm talking this morning with Andrew Guilford. He's a professor of history and environmental studies at Fort Lewis College. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back. Stay with us. We are back. You're listening to the Wednesday Morning Zine, and this is KSJD. I'm Tom Yoder. My guest this morning is Andrew Guilford, a professor of history and environmental studies at Fort Lewis College. And we're talking this morning about wilderness, its importance in our lives, and some of the issues surrounding wilderness and access to it. Mr. Guilford, you recently edited a book called Outdoors in the Southwest, an adventure anthology. It's a collection of writings from Terry Tempest Williams, Edward Abbey, Craig Childs, and others. Talk a little bit about how that came together and what its importance is.
At Fort Lewis College, we have an environmental studies degree. We also have a adventure education degree. And I had a sabbatical a few years back, and I bought every book that was being used that semester for adventure education. And quite frankly, they were dull. You know, the topic is great, but the books were just a little on the dull side. So I thought, you know, we can do better than this. So because I have so many 20-year-olds in class, I think I know how they see the world. So I put together a book that addresses wilderness and environmental issues. It starts with why we need wilderness, and it ends with stewardship. So it's not a nature guide. We got plenty of those. It's not a hiking guide. It's a combination of things, and it's really stories about being outdoors. Some of them are by very famous authors. Some of them are oral history interviews. Some have never been published before. There's a section on encountering animals. There's a section on canyons and deserts. There's stories about getting hit by lightning in the Wemenooch Wilderness. Ellen Malloy's great story about losing her raft in Deso Gray and having the raft float away, and she has to swim after it. There are stories from Katie Lee about being naked in a plunge pool in Glen Canyon, only to find that she couldn't climb out, and the sun had changed. She was very, very cold and couldn't figure out how to get out of this pool. So it's just intended to be a great read. It's got study questions. Hopefully students will use it. But I think the general theme is responsibility, humility outdoors, and stewardship. And all too often, we take a hike, but what do we give back to public lands? And in this year, the 50th anniversary of wilderness, I think that's an important question.
Well, it sounds like the book is also looking at stories and saying, hey, you know, go out into the wilderness, have these adventures. Is it geared for young people for them to get a sense of what wilderness can do for them as an individual, how it can mold them and shape them in that way?
Absolutely, and the sorts of trouble you can get into. There's a great double interview with an individual who fell 900 feet off Engineer Peak near Durango, and the helicopter nurse who helped save him. So I combined those two accounts into one narrative. And so there's some real lessons in this book about danger, about hiking alone, about solo experiences. And it's not about place names. It's not going to tell you how to get here and there. It's a different kind of book, and I think it'll be used in college classrooms, and I hope the general public picks it up. It's about ethics. It's about a new phrase I'm coining called catch and release arrowhead hunting. You know, it's illegal to pick up arrowheads on public lands, but that doesn't mean you can't touch them. You just can't take them. So catch and release arrowhead hunting is in there. How to find cowboy corrals and what to look at. And so it's just sort of distilled over 20, 30, even 40 years, really, of my being outdoors and having solo experiences and what you can encounter, both good and bad.
You mentioned that the book kind of ends up with stewardship. Tell me more about that. What does that mean?
Well, stewardship means giving back, and a phrase that I think is really important is called wilderness tithing. So, yes, on public lands, we have access. We pay a lot of fees, whether we like it or not. But what do we really give back? So there's stories about the Durango-based Great Old Broads for Wilderness, some of the things they do, the Colorado 14ers Initiative and working on trails, the Southwest Conservation Corps, and also work I've done with friends at Lake Powell picking up trash. And pretty interesting statistics on that. In any given year, the average now for the volunteer crews who pick up trash at Lake Powell, it's 56,000 pounds a year.
Man.
Pounds a year. And so in 100-degree heat, you're out there with garbage bags, and you find everything. I mean everything. Microwaves, propane bottles, plenty of beer bottles. Fishing lures are kind of fun. I did find one hand grenade, but luckily it was plastic, and a refrigerator, and then an old rocket box, which one of the volunteers assumed that it was really good river booty. And we knew otherwise, but she was convinced she'd found
groover.
A groover, yeah. She'd found a $150 Perception kayak paddle the day before, so she thought she was on a roll. And we said, look, you go take that up on top of the cliff here. We'll sit on the back of the houseboat and drink a beer, and you open it. And the smell was amazing.
Bet it was. Mr. Gulliver, thank you so much for coming in and talking with me this morning. It was a real pleasure.
It's been great, and you've got a great radio station.
Thank you. You've been listening to the Wednesday Morning Zine. My guest this morning was Andrew Gulliford. He's a professor of history and environmental studies at Fort Lewis College, and we've been talking about wilderness this morning, its role in our lives and in society. I'm Tom Yoder.